All right, we're going live, everybody.
Good morning, welcome to today's agenda for special purpose for the emergency meeting of Bethlehem City Council for Saturday, March 11th, 2020, here at 9 a.m. in Town Hall. Would all please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you for joining us today under these circumstances, everyone who's here. First, the clerk would please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Mr. Cologne.
Present.
Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Present.
Mr. Groen. Mr. Reynolds.
Can I get a mic?
Dr. Van Wert.
Present.
Mr. Waldron.
Present. As you can see, there's only a couple of us up here at the dais, but we have a few other council members scattered throughout the audience, keeping our spacing and distancing together. So we do have a quorum. The purpose of this meeting was to pass a resolution we were unable to pass on Tuesday because of the lack of quorum. So we only have one agenda item today, which is a consideration of resolution titled Joint Declaration of Disaster Emergency by the City Council of the City of Bethlehem and the Mayor. And if the clerk would please read a summary of that resolution.
The resolution does three main things. It declares an emergency per the referenced Disaster Emergency Proclamation. It activates the city's formal emergency management plan. It also authorizes the council president and the mayor to sign the attached and referenced proclamation, and it links the duration of the emergency period to match the emergency period set by the Pennsylvania governor.
Thank you, Mr. Verdummy. We don't have any public with us today, which I think is a good thing. However, we have some folks watching at home. So we'll move over to, I guess we'll recognize Mr. Novotnik, or we'd be presenting first our Mr. Merriam's statement.
Yeah, if I could just give a quick overview, then I'll turn it over to see if Mr. Evans wants to make any comment, and Kristen, and then the two chiefs. First of all, I just want to say that I really want to thank Kristen, Chief Novotnik, and Mr. Evans, especially the three of them, have really done an outstanding work as long, in addition to all the department heads, including Chief DeLuzio and all the city personnel for their understanding and their cooperation, some of the things that we're going to be implementing as of tomorrow, as of Monday. In addition, we did issue several memos, several press releases, I think two new YouTube videos that were sent out to everyone. City Council should have received all that information because it's very fluid situation that changes sometimes hourly. Starting Monday, though, just very briefly, Public Works and Water Department will be split into two shifts, going from 7 to 3 and then 3 to 11, and we're leaving that up to the department heads to determine the personnel that will be doing the two shifts. City Hall will remain open, but we have the drop-off right when you come in for the foreseeable future. Police, fire, and EMS will practice social distancing, but they'll continue to operate. We've been working very closely. Kristen has, the chief has, and myself in constant communication with Mayor O'Connell Valentine. We're trying to speak 2-3 times a day. So we're trying to basically both of us be on the same page. And that's been working well, great cooperation from the mayor of Allentown and also the health director of Allentown, too. The governor's memorandum that was sent out yesterday to everyone and posted now has been extended till Monday morning for enforcement, 8 a.m. And so we sent that out early this morning as a press release and social media and everything. So the enforcement of everything the governor listed will begin Monday at 8 a.m. And I've also met with the parking authority, and we did issue a press release, and I think it was the right thing to do, at least until April 3rd, opening the garages. The public could use the garages free. The booting of vehicles will be suspended until further notice. Suspending of citation late fees from March 1st to April 3rd to be extended if necessary. Street cleaning enforcement suspended until further notice. And they'll only be issuing tickets or citations for violations of public safety. For example, I don't need to go through the whole list, but double parking by fire hydrants, etc. So we are also internally discussing some other options if we have to take an additional step with personnel, etc. And But as of today, I think that gives us a pretty good summary of where we're at. But there's also other things. Everything's on the table depending on how bad this gets and how many more cases. And we've been in contact with, you know, the hospitals and the colleges and universities and Wood Creek and really everyone. So that's my report. I don't know if Mr. Evans would want to make any comments, and then we'll turn it over to Kristen and the two chiefs.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll keep my comments brief just to let you be aware of some of the things we're doing internally, and then we'll turn to our, the reason we're here is to hear our reports from emergency management as well as the health department. As far as daily operations, we typically think, as you know, here in City Council, on a five-year plan, but much more strategic, both operationally and through capital plans. We have projects and initiatives that are normally on a 6 to 18 month timeline, and that timeline shifted real quick. I think the word the mayor used best was fluid. It became an hourly issue where everything was coming at us 500 miles per hour, as it was for all everyone across the communities, across, I guess, the world. Our goal by early in the week became, or our mission became, two things. Number one, protect our employees. Number two, remain operational. The number of things government needs to continue to do, we cannot just close out and close the door. So based on information we're gathering from public health department and information that was given to us by the governor, we made adaptations as quickly as we could. I want to thank the employees. They've been incredibly resilient through the week. Attendance has been good. They, of course, there's been a lot of anxiety, as we, again, we've all felt, but they at no time were there any issues. Everyone's working together, realizing what the mission is that we do serve the residents. City of Bethlehem. During the week, we had conversations that honestly, I couldn't believe, you know, it was getting to that level of what we're trying to talk about with these missions that are currently in place. On your way out or waiting this morning, you may have seen our restricted access. By early in the week, we knew we wanted to keep City Hall restricted to outside visitors. Meetings were canceled internal. We started to pull back from external meetings and moving to phone and email. There was a single point of, I won't say single point of contact, but a single point of drop-off out front. We wanted residents to have the feeling the City Hall was open and not have the doors shuttered and locked, but anyone that wanted to come in didn't get any farther than 5 foot inside the door. They were met with someone who was instructed to keep social distance behind a desk that was placed there, so they could meet, greet, instruct, inform, and then turn them around to get them back outside. And there were bins left that could be picked up from time to time, so departments could, to some point, continue to be transactional. Something we worked by mid and later week is now what the mayor did mention is staggered. The number one thing we need to do as the last couple days was split everyone up, keeping the distance. Sometimes that's hard to do when you're trying to do work both inside City Hall and outside in the field. So each department worked. They all had different needs. We became very liberal, which we had to. It was moving quick enough. You try to designate or establish policy in the city for consistency. And at the same time, we have different groups that have different responsibilities, different functions, and ways to get that done. We fully understand that our front line, our health, is the most important thing, and we move our way down. But even like through administration, there are things to do like purchasing. We still need to keep the supply chain going, so we need them here. Financial services need to be here to an extent. Things will slow down, and we understand that, but we do need people in certain areas. So each group was given the responsibility or the task to split up their staff, and that results in every other day, sometimes every couple days, to make sure, you know, that they can clear out that area but still keep production moving inside the city. So it is a day-to-day situation with scheduling. I will tell, if I haven't already, I want to thank all the unions, the FOP, the IAFF, and the SEIU. We're all very understanding. We called them to the table once we established the changes that the supervisors and department heads wanted to make, that thought was the best interest to keep things like the water department, the water filtration, the Wild Creek Reservoir moving, which is the safest way to split them up and keep that distance. We brought in the unions to explain what we wanted, what the city needed, and they were very understanding and cooperative. So that has been all good so far. That took us into the end of the week. There was a whole lot of moving this week. We expect that to continue, but I think next week we'll take a little bit of a step back and begin, next time we meet, to talk a little bit about going forward. Like right now, it's been kind of in a back, you know, standing back defensive position, but hopefully we'll be able to steady up, steady the ship, and talk about some of the financial changes, ramifications, but it's too early for any of that at this point. So that's my report.
Thank you, Mr. Evans.
Good morning. It feels unusual to be here on a Saturday morning. So yeah, the days are running into one another, and trying to keep track of the ever-changing guidance has been the biggest challenge at this point. The Department of Health is releasing new guidance, new health alerts, as Dr. Van Moor can attest to. So there's been just a lot of confusion. They changed the isolation and quarantine recommendations this week, so just trying to get a handle on that, as well as the health department's role. We were working the communicable disease investigations with COVID-19 just as we would any other communicable disease, where we investigate the individual that was reported positive, have their contacts identified, and then we notify the contacts. The Department of Health, because of the pure volume that they're seeing and because some health departments are so inundated, they've backed off of that recommendation. At this point, we're still moving forward with the way we've always proceeded, where if we interview an individual who's positive, we get their contacts, we are personally reaching out to those contacts and making sure that they receive the correct information. Our concern is if we leave it up to that individual who is positive to locate their contacts and provide them with the information, we're just concerned about the information that will be relayed, that it will be relayed accurately. So at this point, the plan is to continue investigations as we always have done, unless the case volume gets to a point that we can't handle it. We'll have to develop guidance to give to the individuals who are positive to then follow through with their contacts. But at this point, that's going to remain our policy until further notice. The Department of Health, again, has been updating their case counts. They update their case counts typically at noon daily, but they are falling behind because we were receiving information through the disease surveillance system that we utilize. All positive and negative cases will come through that system. We're checking it multiple times a day so we can stay on top of the positives in our jurisdiction. So the testing numbers that were reported as of yesterday at 12 o'clock, Pennsylvania was at 268 cases, and then 10 were in Northampton and 2 were in Lehigh. But we were already working on a case in Lehigh that hadn't been in that case count. So again, they're looking at least a day behind in the reporting numbers. Currently in Bethlehem, we have two cases, Bethlehem, Lehigh County. We also were involved in an additional case with the employee at Wind Creek Casino. That individual did not reside in the city, but given the fact that Wind Creek was in the city of Bethlehem, we assisted Wind Creek with the notification, with the press releases going out, etc. So we worked with them to be able to identify the employees who have been working the day that the individual who was infected with COVID-19 was working, and then we were able, through surveillance video, to identify close contacts of the customers that were there at Wind Creek. So all of those individuals have been notified. We started receiving calls yesterday, so we're guiding those individuals, you know, through the process of what they need to do regarding quarantine and testing. Mental health is a concern. It's something, you know, we've talked about a little bit, but certainly with people being under, you know, quarantine right now, individuals potentially losing their jobs, mental health was already an issue, as we all know. And during this current situation, we're just really concerned, about the mental health and well-being of individuals. If, you know, they're cooped up in their homes, social isolation was already an issue. It's going to be even more so during this time. So that's something that we want to, you know, focus on during the next week, and anything that we can do to assist folks. I know the Department of Health put out a hotline number. We're going to be in contact with the county to see what we can do, so if folks are feeling that they're in distress, that they have someone to talk to and somewhere to go during this time. Another concern is the homeless population. I know I mentioned this the other evening when I was here. We did work with Lehigh County to submit an unmet needs request. The concern with the homeless population is if somebody tests positive, they need to be isolated, and then their close contacts need to be quarantined. Right now, there's no place for those folks to go. So we're working with the county to try to identify a site that, if the need arises, which I feel that it will, that we have a site to put those individuals who need to be in quarantine so they're not spreading it throughout the community. There also was reported, I believe, that Lehigh is now up to three cases. Lehigh students, they have made it clear that they have not been on their campus. They were individuals that were in spring break. They never returned to the campus after spring break, but they're at home. But I know that that's been in the news as well. And I think that's it for the updates that I have now at this point in time. Anybody has any questions?
Yes. Thank you for your information. It was only 4 days ago that we were here, but it just feels like so much longer because this is so quickly moving and the guidelines are changing and the new information is coming out. So I appreciate you coming in on a Saturday, but I have a feeling you might have been here anyway at this point. Are there any other questions or comments for Ms. Winder? Yes, Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
First of all, I would like you for
Ms. Gramsci-Smith, we're going to have to get you on the mic here.
Okay.
If you want to just turn this one there, Mr. Klon. Sure.
Okay, thank you. First of all, I just want to thank you for all your hard work during these challenging times. I just have one question as far as the mental health. Do you know if the county crisis intervention is boosting up their services as far as like availability and increased workers?
I do not, but that's one of the reasons I want to reach out to them.
Okay.
You know, I know it's currently operating. I just don't know if they've enhanced.
Okay, I was just wondering because that's a great resource, and I'm thinking these times is probably, you know, more necessary, and they're probably going to need to boost up their services. So, okay, thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Gallian?
If I speak loudly, can you hear me or not?
I mean, I can hear you. It's tough to tell whether they're going to pick it up on the YouTube video, which is the purpose of the amplification.
I just want to thank everybody, and please tell everybody that we are in unprecedented times right now. No one's ever seen this in our lifetime. So I want to thank you for all the work that you're doing. And I can't imagine the amount of stress everybody's under and the amount of hours that you're putting into this. So thank you very much. And please tell all the department heads and all the people that work underneath you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Paige, you can use that mic there too.
So you and I have been in communication, and I thank you for all the time and guidance you've given in terms of my role as a nursing home doctor and the risk that this presents to all of our citizens in nursing homes. The other thing that I guess I just wanted to ask is, are we coordinating as a city with the hospital networks to understand kind of their statuses in terms of how they're doing with their ERs, their vent units, and even the blood supply? For example, I got an email as part of my staff role at St. Luke's that they were in severe shortages of Rh negative blood, and that we could still donate blood. As citizens observing the 6-foot rule by making an appointment at Miller Keystone and setting up a time to go in so you're not inundating them all at once, to be able to give the hospitals, and I was hoping you could just give me a sense of what our coordination efforts are with the hospitals.
Sure. So as I've stated, when I was here on Tuesday, the one thing that we're fortunate is that an infrastructure already was in place for emergency preparedness response. So there's something called the Healthcare Coalition. So that's been, that was a coalition that was formed several years ago just to respond to, you know, any type of emergency, public health emergency type situation. So that group has been coordinating calls daily. So the healthcare networks from the region are on those calls, as well as I'm, you know, personally in touch with both healthcare networks. One of the conversations early on this past week was the need for a call center just because of their call volume. It was determined from the healthcare networks at this point that they feel that they can handle the calls that are coming in because they've redeployed staff. So we're not looking at assisting with that at this point in time, but that's a possibility. But we have been in contact with them on a daily basis just as far as what they're seeing with testing, you know, and concerns, issues that they may have. So that's just a daily communication, multiple times, sometimes a day. So at this point, any unmet needs as far as supplies, that needs to be first, the healthcare council needs to be informed, then it goes to our local county EMA, and then it goes to PEMA. So there's a process in place if they have any unmet needs from their hospital system, so they're all aware of that. Unfortunately, the requests, as you can imagine, are astronomical. I think, Bob, did they say like over 200 requests a day that they're getting, you know, in the state for unmet needs? So they're really sifting through, and I think they're, you know, trying to really pinpoint the areas that they truly need the supply. So that's, of course, a concern and will remain a concern as our numbers increase. The other thing I just wanted to mention as well, which was mentioned on the call with the Secretary of Health on Wednesday, is, you know, for the public to keep in mind that with the tests that are currently going to commercial labs, only 5% are coming back positive. So I know that there's a lot of panic out there from the public. I have a loved one that went and got tested. I have somebody that was a close contact, maybe at a work site, that went and got tested. And I understand that panic, just hearing that somebody that you were in close contact with had a test, but only 5% of those tests going to commercial labs are actually coming back positive. We also are working with the Bureau of Labs. the higher risk populations are going, their tests are going to the Bureau of Labs because the turnaround time is faster. So if you have somebody in a congregate care setting, such as a nursing home that's symptomatic, they want to have those tests sent to the Bureau of Labs so we can get the fast turnaround time. If there's a healthcare worker that's symptomatic, those tests can be sent to the Bureau of Labs as well. So the tests that are going there, about 15% are coming back positive. So I just want to, you know, keep that reference in mind that the majority of tests are coming back negative. I know some nursing homes now, one on the call yesterday had mentioned that they have rampant flu right now, type A. So that's also posing a little bit of a challenge during this time. They have both workers and residents there that are positive for flu. So that, again, is still circulating.
It's been the worst flu season I've seen since practicing for 20 years. So it's just no chance.
And to your blood supply question, that was also brought up during our call this week with the Healthcare Council. So I know that that's something that Miller Blood Bank is on top of, you know, trying to communicate out to the general public because that's of concern. There have been hospitals that have had to delay procedures because they don't have enough blood in supply. None locally in this area that I'm aware of, but further out in the region.
To follow up on the flu point, how would someone differentiate? Because, you know, somebody starts to get a headache or sniffles, they're going to obviously think it's COVID-19. They're not going to think it's seasonal flu. What are some of the differentiations between those two things, and how do you eliminate one versus the other?
Well, and that's a difficulty because some of the symptoms mirror one another. Respiratory panels all are being run for patients, so that's being run. And then if we can, you know, identify that the person's positive for flu A, then that's, you know, the explanation. If not, if they're not seeing any positives on the respiratory panel, then they're doing the COVID-19 testing. And I don't know if you have anything further to add, Dr. Van Wert, but I know that they're running both respiratory panels and then the COVID testing.
Yeah, there's not clear guidance in terms exactly how to run it, but we in nursing homes, because we're at an elevated risk, if a person has influenza symptoms, fever, and a new onset of a cough, we're running the tests. Well, first we're calling the Pennsylvania Department of Health, and then they usually expedite, if they agree with us, they expedite the test. So I've tested one person, the turnaround was negative. Was 24 hours because it called the Department of Health, and then we also sent off the viral panel at the same time. For lower risk individuals in the common population, you would rule out the flu first by sending off the viral panel, and then if there is no other explanation for why they're having the symptoms, they would consider running the COVID panel.
Understood. So there's a lower bar for that testing for the flu.
And that turnaround time you can get a lot faster. You can run a rapid, obviously. You know, now we're getting into allergy season as well, so you're going to have more people, you know, presenting with, you know, the sniffles, you know, cough. So that's a concern where people are going to assume, you know, even though it might be allergies, that they might be, you have contracted COVID-19. So you have a lot of things that are still floating around in the community that are not COVID-19, but there's a heightened awareness and concern. But that's where it's important to, you know, consult with your healthcare provider. That's why the healthcare networks are doing the triaging, where, you know, folks can call over the phone, they can email or do the telemedicine, and then they can triage and figure out exactly, you know, what they think is occurring, and then if that person's recommended for testing.
Understandably so, yeah. I know now that all daycares are closed and just about everything else is closed, folks are at home right now, quarantined kind of in their house. And people are feeling very isolated, and if you're one of those few who still have to work, sometimes people will rely on childcare, whether that's another family member or a grandparent potentially, and that's a bit challenging for folks who still have to go to work and still need to find a place for their kid, but don't want to potentially expose someone who's in a higher risk category, an older person, to being in charge of a child and providing childcare. So a lot of families are really stretched thin as far as resources. Can you talk a little bit about necessarily whether that's something that is, at this point, is necessary to separate older folks? I'm, for instance, in my family, my mom has decided to stay away from my kids, and understandably so, because, you know, she wants to make sure that she stays well and vice versa. So I wasn't sure if that's something, a practice that is necessarily something that you would push for.
I would, which it makes it even more so challenging for families that still need to work, and if they have a parent that typically could watch that child, and now that they can't, because I'm in the same position where social distancing from my in-laws and my parents. Luckily, my children are old enough that I don't need to worry about childcare, but it definitely is a concern. Children, it's been stated, you know, through research that although we're not seeing a high number that actually have COVID-19, that they can be carriers for COVID-19. Obviously, the elderly population is a vulnerable population, so it's not advised where you'd have, you know, the elderly taking care of children during this time, which really puts a crunch, you know, on families as far as childcare. I did read early on in the week, and again, because things are evolving, I did read that childcare facilities could apply for a waiver. So if they have, you know, X percentage of their children there where the parents were healthcare workers or where they were like mandated to work, that they could remain open. But to be honest, I haven't had a chance to look and see if that guidance changed based on Governor Wolf's decision to close all non-essential businesses. But that had been an option earlier on in the week.
Right, and obviously that's something I want to talk about with the chiefs too, is the non-essential businesses and what that's going to look like in our city. But does anyone else have any other questions for Ms. Wondrick at this time? Thank you so much.
Morning, Council. I'll brief you on a couple items, and I want to ask Robert also. Access to the emergency operation plan, is that clear now through our IT department for council members?
For our office, we have hard copies that are available. They don't have external access to it. Our office has access to it, so they, you know, we can get them access.
Yes, we'll probably try this week to get you access to the city's operation plan, which is
we're not on that shared database, so if it's digitally on there, it's not accessible to us. We need a physical hard copy.
Okay. The physical hard copies you may have in the past are probably outdated. There's so many phone number changes that are confidential in here. But if you have to go through Robert, he can get you whatever you need to look at that down the road. And there's also parts of the emergency operation plan that fall under the health department only. Christian has those that are kept in under lock and key with her, kind of. Okay, so that's out there, just so you know. But the main reason for this is continuity of government. If something does happen, we will still function. We talked about it the other day, and some of us weren't here. We're three deep at every position, so that if something would happen, government can function. Decisions could be made at different levels. Even though maybe a key person's out of the loop, decisions could still be made, and that's covered in this book. And that's another reason that we signed a declaration too, so we can continue that. Government will continue to function. So if you have any questions about this, feel free to reach out to me how it really works for government. The next thing I want to tell you, the mayor did declare it a disaster, and that's why we're here today. There's a couple key points about that. And the first one is, the reason that you do it is, I'm going to read it, quoted from the information we get. The primary benefit to the local declaration is to allow for municipalities to bypass normal procurement procedures and to address emergency needs. So that's already happening. They're buying supplies here in the city. Things are going out for bid. And we could look at contracts, we could look at union issues, and things could be changed. And they are being changed. We're looking at changing shifts and everything else without any problems with union contracts. So that's one of the big reasons that you declare a disaster declaration. And then the other one would be, if any federal money and resources become available, the declaration helps us meet that local need, which is really important. We're going to talk about unmet needs here in a minute with Chief DeLuzio, because we experienced something yesterday that we weren't too happy about. We did request masks and hand sanitizers. We're at the point now where I'm working with a local distillery up in Metropolia area, and also with our purchasing agents to purchase products here that are in short supply. We did put in for 1,000 masks, and we ended up getting less than
a box of 20.
Police got a box of 20. Fire got, I think, less than 50, and our EMS got around 100. So I have to resubmit again. That's considered they met my needs for 1,000 masks with 100 and some. So I'll be reapplying this week. So that's one of the problems we're having. That we're seeing here, cleaning supplies and Purell, and not just Purell, but hand sanitizers and masks. But we'll keep plugging away and trying to get more. I think if there's more cases show up here, I think our needs will be addressed more then. They'll be looking at us more. I mean, Montgomery County is a big focus now in other places where they're doing the drive-through clinics. So we'll keep looking at the unmet needs and see what we can satisfy for the city of Bethlehem. But our workforce is out there, the police, fire, and EMS functioning as normal. There are a couple people off sick at this time, but there's no confirmed cases of anybody of our employees yet, but some are off sick with other issues. Maybe the flu, we're not really sure yet. We'll keep an eye on those. And as for
My department downstairs, the service center, is working, are working when someone is off there. We do work a little short, but we're covering all the needs. Our volume isn't higher right now, but many questions and like concerns and complaints, that's what we're getting. And we're dealing with them here. All 911 will still go through the county, though. So that's being addressed, all the 911 needs. And the city of Bethlehem, I said it the other night, we have not missed a call. We have not been late to a call. We send the same amount of people to a call. We just assess the call upon arrival, how much we're going to commit someone in, especially if it's someone that possibly has COVID-19. That's how we're handling those cases. Any questions on that? Because I'm going to jump into where we are now in our tiers here.
No. Oh, thank you.
All right. What happened is when you go through this, we always practice. Christian said it before. I practice it with all the chiefs. We are now, there's four levels in the city of Bethlehem and in the county. Level four is a normal day. That's how we operate, how we operated a month ago. Police are going out on calls. Fire's going out on calls. Everything's being addressed. There's no major problems. There might be water main breaks. There could be gas leaks. Everybody's doing the normal routine here. That's a level four. We have now dropped down to a level three in the city of Bethlehem. So what does that mean? Well, what happened was we secured our comm center, where all law enforcement is downstairs in their communications. The counties did the same too. They secured those sites. No visitors, no police go into that except the supervisors and administration. We actually like almost like isolate them down there, so there's less chance of spread of anything or distractions. They're more focused on now what's happening and addressing the calls that are coming in. Also, we locked down, Eric Evans talked about the front of the building here, which is a great decision that was made early on, and also parts of our record room and other areas where there's sensitive material or anything else. Those areas are off limits to the regular city employees that just even walk in there. So we did lock down parts of the city internally here, which is what you have to do. Counties are mirroring it, Allentown, other places doing the exact same thing. This is the level we're at now, level three. And what also has to happen, by emergency management guidelines, everything that happens that we know about that's pertinent to what's going on now, the health care issue, we have to inform Mayor Donches, administration staff, and you, like what is really happening. That's why we're here today. Any department you need in here would have to come in here. If you had any questions, explain what's going on. If there's anything that you had questions about or anything that you're unsure of, they would come in here. If you had a fire question, we would have Chief Aki standing in here. We have Chief DeLuzio here representing police because of the law enforcement issue that's coming up. But that's how it works. Information, very open, talking about what's happening in the city of Bethlehem. You're getting great reports from Christian and her staff. You get one from Chief DeLuzio today. That's at level three we're at. We're right on the border of level two. Level two basically is a shutdown of City Hall. We did it during Hurricane Sandy, if you remember, for about 8 to 9 days till we came back online. Like no power, no elevators, no computers, nothing was working. So at that time we had done it, and we did the same lockdown, just essential staff, police, fire, EMS. They didn't have very many calls because the roads were still blocked with trees down and there was no electricity during Hurricane Sandy. This is different. This is human contact that's causing this issue right now. But we're not at that yet, but we'll come, we'll see. It's changing, like we said, daily, if not hourly. So that decision will be made. Level heads will be thinking about how we could do it if we're going to do it. But it's not there yet, but we're right teetering on that level. Level one is worst case scenario. Level one means that's it. Whole city shut down, probably the whole state shut down, probably in the country with this, like nobody's going on any roads, law enforcement will be out in force, military is called in. We're not at that level at all yet. But that's the worst case scenario. That's level one. So just so you understand the four levels, if you go through the book or you're wondering, you have any questions, don't hesitate to call me. That's where we're at. We're at level three, teetering on level two.
Understood. On that move to level two, because we have this chart in front of us here, you know, there's definitely an argument that we could be at that point now, but I understand the threshold might be the triggering of shutting down City Hall and sending away all non-essential employees, which is basically, you know, public safety at this point in health. I guess, is there one event that would trigger that move from three to two? My thought is if a city employee tests positive.
Possibly, but it'll be driven more by the state than it will be by us. I think we're handling Bethlehem rather well. Organized communication, lines are open between everyone, what's going on. Cases here, but not a lot. lot of people are in doubt. You can see the results of 5% when Kristen was talking about that. So it's going to be driven by the state, I think. I think if they say, that's it, we're shutting down, I think that's what we're going to say. We're on board with you. We're doing it. I don't think we should do it before the state does it. We talk internally all the time about it. I don't know how we're going to handle it if an employee here tests positive, because other cities do have employees test positive. I heard one police department had 5 police officers test positive, I guess, in the last 24 hours, and almost 100 of those other police that were working with them are now being looked at now, and some of them told not to come to work. But we're not there. I mean, our forces are going out. They're doing a good job. We're looking at their tweaking schedules. Chief has contingency plans. Chief Aki has plans for his fire stations. Tom Decker has plans for his staff. Christian's already doing plans with her staff, how they're going to have people in here, because health has been critical with this, without a doubt. I mean, the resources that they have is, and information is just so important to have them here.
Right.
But City Hall will keep it open as we are now and flex it as it goes as we meet with the mayor every day.
And does this chart with the 4 levels, the action level, activation levels, does that mirror the county or the state?
Yes, it actually, you could, it's the exact same document. Almost 12 years ago when I got involved in this, I had my own plan how it was. I always thought number 1's okay, 2's bad, 3's the worst. I had to correct and adapt to the state, and this is the policy that throughout Pennsylvania is being
used. So is the state at level 3 at this point?
They are at a level 3.
Okay.
Well, the counties are at level 3, and I only deal with the counties, and the state is there also. But I deal directly. My next point of contact is always the counties, and they're at that right now.
Understood.
At their comm centers and also with their employees.
Okay. So ultimately, it's the decision of the administration whether we move to level 3 and then, you know, and back down when we get to, you know, we move to 3. That would be the administration's decision. You don't need anything from council, is my question.
When we move to level 2. We're at 3 right now.
Thank you.
Yeah, if you go down to the public service center or comm center downstairs, the doors are marked, it's labeled what level we're at. That's what we have to do according to our policies in here. And when it goes down to that level, no, the mayor, well, we'll follow the state probably, but the mayor will say, this is what we're doing. I'll say, I agree with you. All the department heads in agreement. You'll be informed, like, we have to inform you of everything, which is what we want to do. You'll know the second we know that we're going to that level.
Sure.
And that would be probably to shut down the city hall, but we're not there yet.
Understood.
Just to be clear, we're not there yet.
Thank you, Mr. Vatnik. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on?
No, those are the items. Just okay. Where we're at in the city, and any questions you have, I'll...
Yeah, I'm going to turn to the rest of the council if they have any thoughts. Dr. Van Moore?
So has this has clearly diverted some resources around in terms of what you do. I've been hoping that the Bethlehem Service Center can be of use to our citizens when they have concerns about something that they're seeing, or I don't want them to inundate you and overwhelm resources that could be used somewhere else, but at the same time, it seems like an optimum place to have the citizens be able to call you. If Monday at 8 a.m. when there's a mandatory shutdown and citizens are seeing things that they feel do not jive with that order, is there a way that they can interact with you through that service center, like maybe the app itself, so it's not like taking up valuable phone time of your employees? But do you have any advice for the citizens in terms of trying to be helpful in this setting, so that we're all doing the same thing?
Sure. We have an uptick in calls now. A lot of complaints of a business that is still open even when it was not mandatory, but places are open. No, call the 7000 number. And what they'll do is they have a running list. They give some advice out of things that are on the list, and they defer them to different departments. If it's a health issue, downstairs they immediately, if it's Monday through Friday, they're contacting them. But if not, they're getting in touch with the representatives from the health department. If it's law enforcement, they deal directly with them, because it's not a 911 call. These are citizen concerns, and we're addressing every one of them as they come in. We're compiling lists of them so that we could maybe have a question and answer blog put out eventually on the sites that we have. So we're handling all that through the comm center, and the calls are on an uptick, definitely are, and we're handling them all as they come in here. A lot of questions we divert also to the Department of Health, especially if they're really deep into the COVID-19 questions that we cannot answer. We give them the proper contacts in Harrisburg that they could reach out to them and give that direct number. But part of the problem was some of the waits on those phone calls are pretty long that are going to the Department of Health. But we're doing the best we can to accommodate those folks, keep them on the phone, give as much information as we can, and then gear them to, or address them to our departments. Definitely, though.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Klum.
Thank you. Mr. Vaughn, just one quick question, and this is circling back to what we were talking before about child care and that some daycares are open with a waiver program for medical personnel. I know that also applies to first responders, and there's about 20 daycares in the Lehigh Valley that are open. Has that been shared? I assume that's been shared with all of our city personnel for fire, police, and EMS.
Well, I heard, because my daughter's involved up in where she lives in Escohony, that hers is going to be open on Monday because of the people that work in the hospital network. But I don't have that list, but boy, that'd be a great resource for us to get our hands on, to tell you the truth, for our staff, because that's going to be the issue. When the kids are home in that certain age group, the parents are going to want to be home, whether it's a police officer or...
After this meeting, we'll talk, because sure. I have the list I forwarded to you, and it does apply to both medical personnel and the families of first responders.
That's great.
I think it's between the ages of 5 and 12. So we could talk after the meeting.
Oh, that's great. Great information for us. Thank you.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Once again, thanks for all your work in these daunting times. My question is, I know that the medical profession is spread thin, and I'm concerned, like you said, about some police departments that have some people test positive. Do you have any plan, or what will we do if we have employees, especially like the emergency responders, if we have some test positive, if we have to do quarantine, and if we're down on staff, and if this, you know, which naturally this is going to get worse instead of better, do we have a plan? Like, can we call in people that are retired, or, you know, subs, or, excuse me.
We wouldn't call anybody retiring right now, but there are mutual aid, just talking to Chief DeLuzzi earlier today, they have with other police departments. Chief Aki has been dealing with that issue too, if you have to reach out to resources outside the city. And also our EMTs are the same way. A lot of our paramedics work part-time other places too. They're getting pulled in different directions for resources. But the bottom line is, they are looking at schedule changes too. Maybe 12 hours on, 12 hours off for the paramedics, keeping them separate. You go home, running, maybe throwing another ambulance on, keeping them at a certain area, kind of clean at a certain area for calls that are related to the virus. I mean, different things like that are taking place. Chief DeLuzio and Deputy Mikes will have their own plan. They've been discussing on a daily basis how they're going to cover it if their shifts start going down. They pulled a lot of, I don't want to talk for Chief DeLuzio, but just what I witnessed is bringing guys that are non-uniform, vice, investigators in back, get dust off your blue uniform with your badge, you're coming out. So I'll let Chief talk about that when he comes up here. But I'll speak on behalf of Aki. He has a great plan in effect already, how he would handle it at the stations. If a station would go down with six firefighters in it, how he would back up that station and fill it. And he's even in talks with Allentown. I mean, he's not here, but he told me that if something happens in Allentown or Bethlehem, we have a great, we've done it before for bad fires over near Nitchin. We had a major fire along the creek at the Bethlehem place that burned right near the Monoxie Creek and Moravian. Like, they come in and they help us out. As soon as the fire's out, they go back home in case they have something happen there. So they will share resources in the event of emergency, because look, police, fire, and EMS must function, and our health department right now. This is critical with our health department. The job they're doing is fantastic. But they have to function. The citizens have to see them out, and they respond to every call. And I said earlier, we haven't missed a call. We've been there in the same time we've always been. There's no delays, no reduction of staff. Just assessing it a little differently if it's a medical call. But everything's being taken care of at this time.
Okay, great. That's reassuring. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think that's all for now. Thank you, Mr. Novotnik.
Thank you.
Good morning and happy first Saturday of spring. Positive note there. As you know, it's a fluid situation, this pandemic, and it changes daily. The Bethlehem Police Department's updated by our Health Bureau every day. Also, CDC, I receive reports from federal, state, and other local agencies. We place this information out to all our officers on our Power DMS system. It's mandatory that they read them daily and they sign for them. So we don't get, I don't know from anybody. All our officers do have the information. They're educated on this virus. They're educated on everything going on around the country, around the state, in the county. We've added a few extra protocols and procedures to our daily operations. Officers prior to, during, and after shift wipe down their cruiser cars with cleaners. They washed their hands repeatedly almost after every call. Cruisers and have all clean, they all have personal cleaning items in them for the officers when they're out on the road. Other than the normal PPE devices, we issued additional gloves, eye protection devices, masks, and also full face protection to all the officers via their cruisers. We have proper supplies needed at this point. We are requesting additional supplies through emergency management. As you heard with Chief Novotnik, we received a box of 20. That's like spitting out a fire. 20 from emergency EM in Northampton County is nothing. I have 20 plus cops out by an 8-hour shift. We're the 8th largest city in the state with 180 some police personnel. I think we need more than 20. But we are getting supplies through the public sector and private sector in Bethlehem. We have businesses stepping up, forwarding us hand cleaner and other thing boxes at the time, so which is helping us out a lot. But we do need some help with getting some supplies for police officers. Areas of the police department have been posted and restricted. Our desk sergeant area is still open 24 hours a day, and we continue to engage citizens and handle all the issues that we do on a normal day. The area is constantly wiped down and cleaned. We initiated an email program in which you can file non-emergency police complaints. They involve things like a minor theft of maybe somebody's stole your statue out of your yard or something. They're real minor calls in the city. Nothing in progress and no medical calls, no emergency calls, no person-on-person calls. That can be utilized by the public, so they don't have to have contact with an officer. We try to limit our contacts down. Staffing, we have no issues so far. We're at a level 3 emergency level. Shifts are being filled without any manpower issues. We monitor manpower daily, along with staffing needs and call volume. And we're working with EMS and fire. And we have plans in place to aid each other. Chief Novotnik mentioned a police department in which some officers had the virus and the rest had to stay home and quarantine themselves. We do have plans in place for that if that would happen. Also, as president of the Northampton County Chiefs of Police, we've cooperated with the DA's office at Northampton County, and we do have a mutual aid agreement drafted by the Northampton County DA, Terry Houck, in which all departments can render mutual aid under Title 42, I think it's 8653, don't quote me on the exact section. We also have municipal aid agreements with state police, Allentown police too. So in reference to answering emergency calls, if we'd have a spike in these cases and people to go down among the ranks and among their manpower, we do have plans in place to respond to any calls in the city that we need to. We have no excessive sick right now in reference to manpower, so we're doing very good at this point. So let the citizens know Bethlehem police are out there and we're answering your calls, and we're doing very good at this place. We're keeping track of all our expenses during this because we do want to see end issues, because after this is all over, as we do in everything, including Music Fest and any major event in the city, my department does a critique of itself to see what we can improve the next time. And that's very important in this, because we will get through this and times will return back to normal. There were some questions about, like Dr. Page had a question about people calling in businesses and stuff like that. We do have a plan in place for that, the Chief Novotnik indicated, and that will be addressed by some officers if we do get a complaint. We'll go there, verify if they're open or closed, and it will go on that list, and that will be forwarded to the other departments in the city that handle that, permits, licensing, or whoever the mayor deems fit that they go to at that point. There was another question about mental health issues. You heard the term cabin fever. I think you'll probably get some of that as we get into this a little more. But we do have mental health issues throughout the whole year, so it should not be anything different for officers to handle. It just may, you might see a spike in that. But we do work with the Health Bureau constantly during the year, and Northampton County Crisis during the year, along with Lehigh County Crisis. So if you're wondering about that, those needs will be addressed. And that's about all I have.
Thank you, Chief. It seems like you're taking the necessary precaution to protect the officers in your department. One thing I just wanted to ask on before, obviously I want to talk a bit about the enforcement, was separating patrol officers and even pre-meetings of the platoon. I imagine, you know, officers are probably one per vehicle at this point.
Yes.
Okay.
At this point, that's usually a one per vehicle.
Right.
Even on a normal day.
But I know sometimes with trainees, there can be two in a vehicle. Is that correct?
Yes. If you're on probation and you're being field trained, you have to be with an officer.
There's really no way around that.
No way around that at this point.
Understood. And then at the beginning of a shift, is a platoon getting together still for that briefing?
They do get together. They spread out among themselves, just like we do here.
Is there a way to minimize or eliminate those meetings, do you think, or are they vital to the work that you're doing?
Those are vital at this time because it gets all the information out. What the lieutenant verbally has to tell them, they get their assignments, they get their car assignments, everything else. And it's necessary. It's a necessary evil at this point because you can't practice social distancing. We distance as much as we put in there. But we still have to perform our job as emergency services.
Right. And just how many are in those meetings typically?
15 to 20.
Okay.
A shift.
So that's this shift is about 15 to 20
Yeah,
officers.
That's just uniform officers from patrol. The other units don't go to those meetings.
Right. Understood. Okay, thank you. And then on the enforcement side of this, obviously the governor came down with a pretty sweeping closure of almost all businesses at this point. And it's a pretty stressful and challenging time for folks from the amount of anxiety and stress that's out there, as well as the financial insecurity that almost every family is facing. People need to keep paying bills and they need to keep food on the table. So, you know, understandably so, people are going to want to keep income coming in, but at the same time, the new law for now from the governor is that all businesses have to close, and that's for a very purposeful reason, to prevent people being in contact with each other because of the spread of COVID-19. So I would question, you know, what is the process if somebody sees, you know, a barber shop open or a restaurant that's not adhering to takeout only? What should someone do if they want to be a thoughtful member of the community to address that?
A citizen, you mean?
Yes.
If you're a citizen, you see that, just let us know. Okay. I believe many of these businesses, and I'm telling my officers, exercise common sense during this. Okay? Many of these businesses, I think, if they are open and you stop in there and you talk to them, I think they'll just say sorry and close up then. Okay, there's no need to enforce it. Enforcement of the governor's order comes under, it's Administrative Code 1929 or something like that. Or it can be enforced through city ordinances.
Sure.
Hopefully it's not going to get to that.
Yeah, I would
say exercise some compassion here and common sense.
Sure.
Because this is something, like you said, we have not seen in our time.
People are nervous about how they're going to provide for their families, and I can understand folks wanting to keep operating, if only in a trickle, to try to keep their business afloat during these really uncertain times. That we don't really know how long it's going to last. Is this going to be a week or two or 2 months? There's no way of saying, so people are really concerned about where that money's going to come from. So my hope is that, as you said, officers would go in, you know, and let folks know that they're in violation and they need to close, as opposed to issuing a citation and potentially taking more time and resources away from not only the police department, but as well as these individuals who are just trying to get by in these really challenging times.
I believe we're in agreement on our line of thinking.
Okay. Yes. Good.
You have a business. Other people have business. I have businesses in my family. And we're all in the same boat with this.
Right. Okay. That sounds a fair thought. And what is the best way if somebody was in the community, a citizen, and they wanted to contact the police department? Obviously, this isn't raised the level of a 911 call. What's the best way to get in contact with the police department?
My suggestion to the public would be a call our service center, 865-7000.
Okay.
Talk to one of our dispatchers. Just provide the information. We'll check it out and handle it like we spoke about.
Understood. All right. Thanks, Chief. Are there any other questions or comments from... Yes, Mr. Klein?
Thank you, Mr. Walden. Chief, quick question. Going back to mutual aid and assisting other departments, are those agreements just with the municipalities that are adjacent to the city, or would that be the other city, Allentown and Easton, which, of course, does not abut up against Bethlehem, but because of the size of their jurisdiction, because it works both ways, right? So Allentown or PSP Bethlehem could come in here, heaven forbid something were to happen to our officers, but we could also be sending officers to other municipalities if they were to need the assistance. No?
To an extent, you're correct. Most of these mutual aid agreements, even without this pandemic, on a normal night, let's say, like last summer, you had a huge problem in Jordan Park in Allentown. They called for immediate outside assistance, Allentown. Okay, certain Bethlehem officers went over there, state police came in, Whitehall police. It's usually the bordering municipalities that, so ones that touch your borders, like with Bethlehem, Fountain Hill, Lower Saucon, Bethlehem Township, Allentown on the west side, we've all worked together over the years. You wouldn't see a Bethlehem officer responding up to Forks Township. It's not going to happen. That's the state police, and they have other law enforcement agencies and the ones that border them. But this is to cover the ones that border you, so if something happens and manpower is low and you need immediate help, somebody else can come in, help you, and then return to their jurisdiction, just like we do now. Does that answer your question?
It does, and it would be based on per call, not necessarily that we would have a cruiser from Allentown patrolling West Bethlehem.
It would
be coming in based on call volume.
It may never happen, but once in a while you get a huge crowd situation or something, and they have to call them in, or you get a shooting or something. We've seen a few of them where we assisted Bethlehem Township, Freemansburg, when they had a police shooting, and some other municipalities around us. But that goes on a normal basis. But you won't see a Upper Frog Township cruiser car patrol city. It's not going to happen. We would go to the state police, which I've already communicated with, and vice versa up the chain. There's a protocol on how you request mutual aid. But we're not at any, not even close to that at this point. But with emergency management, the plans go into that. Most of them, the mayor's aware of them, and we would be talking with him if that happens, and him legal in particular.
Understood. Thanks, Chief.
Dr. Darn.
Thank you, Chief. I don't want to get too much in the weeds here, but I have to ask, are the number of masks that you received, are those N95s or surgical masks?
No, the N95s.
Are your men and the EMTs fit tested and provided with those annually?
Yes.
The reason my...
We carry them normally because during the course of the year, you also have the flu, which affects us all in the winter. And we also have some other cases that we've worked with to help deal with. Yeah.
Terrific. The reason my stomach sank when I heard that number is, in my world, the first thing we do when someone has a cough is put a surgical mask on them, and that prevents the droplets from, as much as possible, going out. Do you have that type of protection as well for the men?
I guess they could use the mask that they have, but usually with this, they're putting oxygen on the person right when they get there. They're putting some type of oxygen mask on and their oxygen unit on the person, especially if there's a respiratory issue.
Okay. I hope you have the amount of surgical masks you need to cover sick people who you're responders may be coming into contact with?
We do right now. We have an adequate supply. Okay. I'm looking at as progresses if we continue to go up or if we start leveling off.
Okay.
But like I said, the private sector is really helping us too. A lot of donations coming in of what we need like this, which is great because I'm sending out thank yous every day to people.
Are you reusing your N95s? Like, I have one.
I think you can correct me if I'm wrong on this. I read that you could use them maybe 4 times. They don't recommend past 5.
And I think the recommendations are fluid, honestly, and I check the CDC website, and I get emergency emails from both Pennsylvania Department of Health and the CDC, and the guidelines, even on reuse of equipment, are totally fluctuating and fluid and terrible, really.
It changes every day. I agree with you on that. So
thank you.
Anything else for Chief DeLuzio? Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
We'll move on to our one agenda item, which is the resolution.
It is the resolution, the joint declaration of disaster emergency by the City Council of the City of Bethlehem and the Mayor of the City. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Callahan and Mr. Cologne.
Is there any discussion on the resolution? Clerk, would please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds? I'm sorry. Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 5-0. Is there anything else from the administration you'd like to add?
One point from the chief. One additional point.
Well, as I'm sitting there, it ended up being 3 additional points. Sorry. Just to be clear, when we request unmet needs, I have to go through the county, Lehigh and Northampton County, because we're in both. They attempted to get my request for the hundreds of them. They were unable to secure them even. They had to divide them and ration them out. So the counties did their best. Northampton County, who I reached out to, I was in touch with them last night, Todd Weaver and his crew. They got a limited amount. So the counties are doing their work, but they're just not getting it from the big house in Harrisburg right now. That's where that ends up. The next one is just a clarification. The DCED, they will enforce the business violations that happen. Our center downstairs, when they get complaints about something may be open or there's a problem in a business, they will reach out to that business. They will get an email. Working hours, they'll probably get a phone call also. So that's how that will be handled. It becomes blatant, and there's possible just angry people, or then law enforcement does get involved in that. But a lot of that will be handled by Alicia Carner's department. They do a great job there sending their folks out to address problems as they arise before they get out of hand. So that will be how they will be handled through our center here. And the third one was, what are we doing for City Hall employees? We talk about this every day. So just a couple things. Besides locking down the front door and locking down certain areas here, the cleaning has been ramped up at City Hall. They're taking care of all the hard surfaces. Cleaning supplies, as soon as we found they're available at our local business, even Ackworth Harbor and a couple other places, we've sent vehicles over and they picked them up, our maintenance guys, and they're taking care of all hard surfaces where you're sitting right here. This is all taken care of, and other places throughout City Hall. In addition to that, the hand washing signs have been put up. The health department's been actively involved, just retraining videos of how to do things properly here, making sure people are, you know, do the social distancing, but other things are being taken care of around here. The cruiser cars, every one of them, as of yesterday, has hand sanitizer inside with the vehicle number on it, so it doesn't walk, you know, stays with that vehicle the whole time. Local businesses have actually stepped up. As we sat here now, I just got a text that the social still on the south side will now ramp up and provide hand sanitizer today. I'm gonna be going over there today and help us out for an unmet need, along with another distillery that's up in the New Tripoli area. Eight Oaks is going to help us out. So by just making those contacts with the private sector, it's been wonderful. Even though Wind Creek Casino, everybody that would help us out with things, we're trying to get a hold of equipment that they may have stockpiled a little bit, even masks that they have. So it's been a great partnership between us, the city, and our private business that are really stepping up and reaching out to us. It's been good. And taking care of the citizens, the workers here, we even got a little plan in place, and it went through Eric's office and Mike Alcohol.
they put cleaners in every department. If you know, if you're here, there's spray bots that take care of your own little area even. So there's things done on an individual basis and the whole team here throughout the city. So everything is being addressed as best we can, but there's new ideas coming up. We just had one this morning to talk to Chief DeLuzio. Some police departments are now putting hand sanitizer, washing station right when they're coming like in our garage area, because they're the ones out in the public dealing with a lot of folks every day. And they're having them wash their hands before they come in through the door there in the city hall. So we're going to be addressing that and see if we could possibly do that. We do it during Music Fest, actually. We actually have a hand washing station up at our command post that's supplied by Northampton County. When they bring their big command trailer down there, they really help us out with that. So there's many ideas. This is all new to us. We're all moving forward and trying to improve every day to get the right things working here for the city. And it'll change. Even when this is over with, it's still going to change for us.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Anything else from the administration? I would just ask, as we progress here, to keep us informed as best you can. This may be the last time we're in this room for a while. We have a council meeting on April 7th. I think the likelihood of us having that meeting is pretty uncertain at this point. But I do see a lot of value in these updates. And even if we're not having a council meeting considering an agenda, you know, as long as I can, I'm willing to come in here, and I'll volunteer Mr. Bodoni to do that as well. We can spread ourselves out. I did get a text message from my mom, she's watching the YouTube stream, that we are sitting too close together, and that's not quite 6 feet. But even if you're updating council, and council is Mr. Bodoni and myself, we do have people watching at home, and I think this information is extremely valuable to let folks know what's happening in the city and what the city is doing to move through these really challenging times. So, we'll keep our April 7th meeting on the agenda for now, but we may need an emergency update before that. But I thank you for all the hard work that the administration is doing, as well as the department's head, and all the way down to every individual who's a part of this city and a part of this team that's going to help us get through these really tough times, and then eventually the really challenging recovery that will be required of everyone as we move forward here. So thanks for joining us on this Saturday morning. I think Mr. Donches says this is the only time in his memory that he can remember City Council coming in on a Saturday. But that's what it's going to take as we move forward in the next weeks and months. So, thank you all. This meeting is adjourned.